the good Dr. Blix was being held hostage in front of the stakeout, and it tended to create a kind of a hostile environment. And we thought that this is a fairly historic moment in the United Nations and in world events, and that it would be useful to have a slightly more relaxed briefing in which we could get a sense of how things are going. Dr. Blix has said that he is just a bureaucrat, an international civil servant, and that he is not a politician anymore. But of course we know that at the moment there is nothing that he can do that does not have any political implications. He is the man in the spotlight, and we are very grateful to have him here. He's been long been a friend of the press, and has made himself available to us, and we thank him for that. Thanks very much for coming. And there will be some food available at the end if you guys haven't all eaten it by the time we get there. I'd like to start off, if I may, by asking a couple of questions. One of which is, has the United States given you any guidance or tips that have led to substantive searches, and have those searches revealed anything of note? And secondly, if the current inspection regime continues as it is, with the same level of formal cooperation but not in substance, how long do you think it would take you to arrive at a point at which you would conclude that you are not getting the level of cooperation you need to verify this as a proper disarmament process?
Well, those questions can keep us busy for the next hour.
Good.
Well, we do get tips from the U.S. government, as we do from several other governments. And I do not think that we'll go into telling anybody which ones we are acting for. We are acting upon all of them in due course. And we still have a lot of tips to go by. And I think it's well known that the tip we got about the documents being kept in a private home, that this was a private one and it did yield results. But I do not think I'll go into how many results we have had from various tips of the others. The other question you asked, quite substantial, and it goes into also the attitude to containment. In my statement to the Security Council, I said nothing about asking for more time for us, as you know. It was simply because my good friend Mohammed suggested that he would need a few more months, that I was asked afterwards, why did I not ask for more time? In fact, if you look at the mandate we have, there wouldn't have been any formal reason for asking for more time, because we are set up under 687 and under 1284 and 1441, and 1284 continues, or should continue, unless something is done by the Security Council. All right, so I would not need to ask for any more time. However, with the political situation, the expectation that the United States and other members of the Council might perhaps introduce a resolution that would decide upon or urge other action than we see now, well, then, of course, we're all aware that there could be armed action. And during armed action, I do not envisage that could be any continuation of inspections. Or probably not even after that. That's conceivable, but probably not even after that. So it was just that background, evidently, that Mohammed El-Baradei said what he did say. Now, as I think most of you have heard me say since then, I did not ask it because the thrust of my message was that we do not feel that there is sufficient or adequate Iraqi cooperation on substance. There is cooperation, help on the process, but not on substance. And not knowing if and when that will come, I did not think that it was possible for me to ask for a few months. If I had asked for a few months, it would have been predicated upon the idea that there will be cooperation so that 3 months will help. And so long as I did not see that cooperation and substance, I did not feel it was justified. Now this, I added to that, however, that if the council felt that they would want the inspection to go on, I would welcome it. Because I think, as I said, we have had 8 years of inspection, we had 4 years of no inspectors there, and now we've had 2 months of inspection again. It's a rather short time to call it a day. And that was my view, and I don't know if we are in the hands of the council, as you know, we are the obedient servants of the council. Now, then I've asked, how long time would it, yesterday was asked by some members of the E10, how long time would it be for you if you do not get the cooperation on substance, if you have a reluctant partner? I mean, I hinted in my, or intimated in my speech that there was a difference between South Africa and Iraq. I've often used South Africa as an example of a country that really went all out of its way. It wanted to convince the world, and it did it very well. South Africa, Iraq has differed in this respect. But there is, of course, the difference that South Africa did this spontaneously, and Iraq was made to do it as a result of a ceasefire. And from the basic attitude, there is some difference. Not many people say, all right, we do not see, if you don't have that cooperation, just grudging cooperation as we have had in the past, how long time would it be then for you? And I say, well, we will note that more weapons of mass destruction were destroyed by during UNSCOM and under our supervision and now the IAEA supervision, then during the Gulf War. Nevertheless, we also know that there are many question marks, not so much in the nuclear field, but in biological and chemical and missile field. And I have said also that if we were to have really active cooperation, it wouldn't take that much time. But if you do not, well, then we remember that we were there from 1991 to 98. So it could take a lot of time. Now, that doesn't mean that such an approach is, in my view, meaningless. The council decides what we'll do, okay. But this would then amount to containment. Madeleine Albright talked about keeping Saddam in his box. That is containment. And the President Bush has no confidence in that. He feels after 9/11 is not enough. The containment has to be something more sweeping and more inspiring, more confidence. However, we are there, as I said, with a more muscular team than UNSCOM ever was, with a good deal over 100 inspectors and with equipment, new technology that goes much beyond what UNSCOM had, and it develops all the time. I'm not saying that you can, even with this force, guarantee anyone that they do not have activities underground in caves which we haven't discovered, or that they couldn't be mobile. There are shortcomings to this. I'm aware of that. There is another shortcoming, that is that there could be, as I've termed it, fatigue in the Security Council. Inspection needs to be backed up, and you have now bigger backing up than ever before. How long can that be kept up? By one country or by the whole Security Council? We do not know. So these are shortcomings in the containment theory. Now, it's most easily illustrated by the biological. How can we guarantee that there will be no production of anthrax somewhere in Iraq? Can you guarantee there is none in New Jersey? No. I think that shows the difficulty of this. Let's have no illusions about it. And I'm not trying to exaggerate what you can do by inspection. But there is also a very stark difference between the option of inspection and the option of an armed action. Armed action can clean out, and you can have assurance, a new regime, for however long it lasts, will be somewhat of an assurance. But it's also the cost that have to be considered by the responsible. I'm not the one to take the decision. $100 billion or more, 250,000 men, and political consequences that we don't know. They will consider that. I am not saying what you should choose. I'm responsible for pursuing as best I can the other option, which is 250 men, perhaps, and an annual budget of $80 million. And we have had no injuries so far from this, with the shortcomings there are. I'm not denying them. This is the choice, and it's not for me to make the choice, it's simply to be aware of them and to say that I'm pursuing as best I can this choice. So it can take time, and I'm not, of course, I'm pleading for the Iraqis to enter the cooperation on substance. My impression is that after 10,000 pages given to us, and after 400 names rather than many more, and a number of other signs, that I taken together, I assessed that we do not have the same determination for cooperation of substance as we have had on process, and I was asking for that.
All right. I'm going to start off by calling on some names that will be familiar to you, and I hope they're friendly faces. I'll start off with Colm Lynch of the Washington Post.
Is that a friendly face?
You're going to be calling together an expert missile group to look at questions of the range of the Al-Fatah and the Al-Samud 2. Is this group, can you give me an indication of what you expect them to be looking at? Will they look at the whole missile program, the studs, the casting chambers? And can you give us some indication whether, in your view, the Iraqi argument has been that once they weigh down these missiles, they won't go past the 150-kilometer range. But can you give us some indication whether you believe that these actually might be the beginning of a program that is, in fact, designed to go much farther than 150-kilometer?
Precisely what I like that group to tell me. Well, I mean, they have declared, it's not a mystery, they have declared in the semi-annual, the backlog, and also in the declaration, that they have carried out tests, and that a number of these tests, I think 13 out of 40 or whatever it was, went beyond 150 kilometers. They also gave us a briefing when we were in Baghdad last time, which suggested that, well, these are just tests, but, you know, we have to fit also guidance and control system and another lot of things that are going to weigh them down, and their calculation is that the system as such will be under 150 kilometers. Now, there are lots of technical issues in this, and the old parameter of 150 kilometers, everybody knows who is an expert, is not an ideal one. They should have had some other parameter like thrust or perhaps several parameters. But we are stuck with that. I don't see any likelihood that the Security Council will now adopt a new one that is more technically satisfactory. So there are technical questions, and I would like to have them covered not only by our own experts, who are very good, but also to have some outsiders to give us advice, because if we have to take a decision, we may have to do so, then I would like to have the technical side secure. I also want to have the legal side secure. I don't need to call in any outside legal advisors for this. We have those in-house. So these two things have to come together, and I think I gave Ambassador Negroponte the answer at the last briefing that I hope to have this by the 14th of February.
Well, Evelyn Leopold of Reuters.
Is there a date for that meeting on the missiles? And secondly, with Secretary of State Powell speaking tomorrow, what do you think that he can tell you that you don't know? And secondly, if he does tell you something that you don't know to the entire world, why didn't he tell you this before?
Well, the missile meeting is going to be on Monday and Tuesday next week, so that I will have the material for that before the end of the week. When it comes to Powell's briefing tomorrow, I think that I assume that he is not going to indicate any sites which we should visit, because I would assume that the U.S. would have given the sites to us rather than telling the Iraqis that here is where we think the inspector should go, unless it was a full-fledged new reactor or something like that. So I don't think that's going to be it, judging from what he has written himself and what we have heard. It's more likely to be based upon satellite imagery and upon intercepts of telephone communications or knowledge about Iraqi procurement of technical material or chemicals. And I think it's good. I think everyone is welcomed that he comes here. I mean, it's our main mission to find facts. And if governments have facts to put on the table, I think that's desirable. There's been a healthy discussion already. The aluminum tubes is one thing that has been on the table, I was about to say, for a while, with differing views on it. And maybe he will bring that up tomorrow. I don't think it's an issue that is finally concluded, but it's certainly not raised with the same kind of conviction or certitude as in the beginning. There was the question of the alleged import of yellow cake, uranium dioxide. I haven't heard about that for a while, but that may still be on the table. So we welcome this. They may also say it has been hinted in the media that they have observed that Iraq has sent people to sites where we were going to go in a couple of days' time, and that they have moved stores or ammunition trucks or whatever. And there's been some intimation that there might have been a leak. Now, we have discussed this. We have very direct relations with any one of those who give us tips about the security measures that we take. As you know, it's a one-way traffic, but we have, nevertheless, about security, certainly a good discussion, very frank, and we fully understand that they will not give us information unless they are convinced that the measures we take are secure. And I don't think anyone would really, at a responsible level, would maintain that there have been leaks. There could have been several explanations why some things were moved before we came. I don't think that's going to be said. If there were any risk of a leak, then of course we would look at that very seriously and see how it could be remedied. But at the present time, we do not have the impression of any such leaks have occurred.
Chair Laurie of the London Sunday Times.
Other papers as well. I wanted to ask you, there's a report in Israel.
We have urgings from the U.S. and from others, and we listen to them. There's a lot of wisdom in many of them, a lot of sense, and we act upon some of them. But it's not that I feel that I have to succumb to any of that. As I told you, I mean, we are not in anybody's pocket.
It's been suggested they told you what to write in your last report on January 27th. Is that complete?
The Americans told me what was right? No, the Iraqis told me what was wrong.
No, I said what's to right, not what was right.
What was to right?
What you were supposed to write in your report?
No, absolutely nothing. No, not really, Anne. I think they would have felt that would be counterproductive.
Edie Lira.
Mr. Blix, two questions. What would you consider specifically that from Iraq during your upcoming visit that would make you leave there feeling that they were actively cooperating with you? What specific things? And as a second question and a follow-up to what you were talking about, containment. Do you believe that containment as a policy is still viable in terms of Iraq?
Well, on our expectations for this visit, we have responded to the invitation from Dr. Al-Sadi and made it absolutely clear that the principal item, we think, is how can Iraq assure us in the Security Council that it will actively seek and present any items or programs which are proscribed, or else, if they are not there, to seek and present credible evidence for their absence. This is a central point. There's a lot of talk about the other points that were discussed at our last visit, the U-2 planes, the interviews, the international the legislation prohibiting Iraqi citizens to deal with weapons of mass destruction. These three points that we have mentioned, in our view, are minor points. They are tangible and easy to look at, but they are the minor ones. At this stage of the political development, we think that it is extremely important that Iraq move forward on the substance of it, and not, as I criticized in my statement to the Security Council, and not simply say that these were issues that UNSCOM dreamt up and which were so-called issues of marginal importance. I think they have to take them seriously. And it's true that they've been on the table since 1999. Right? Well, the more reason, I think, that they should take them seriously. This is what we would wait. If they really give us hope that, yes, we'll have the same determination to be active on the substance as they have undeniably been, largely, on the process, that would be the best thing that we could come away with. And I pointed to one practical thing. I pointed to the Commission of Inquiry. I don't know whether it was called that, but there was Commission of Inquiry, which they said they had appointed immediately after we had found the 12 chemical warheads. And that commission came up even while we were there with four more. Well, that's a mechanism. Maybe they can give it more power. Maybe they can extend it to biological weapons. Maybe they could really look around the country and see what is hidden by whoever and come up with it, and also come up with a viable mechanism for providing evidence that they have not given us so far. So this is what I'd hope for. However, I must say that the reactions that I've seen so far from Baghdad have not pointed into a full response of that. I've seen that Mr. Tariq Aziz calls us our mission a technical one. Fine, I'd like to be technical, we want to do that, but it does, as you say, have some political impact what these technical conclusions are. And I've also seen continued discussions about the U-2 planes, spy planes, and the individual scientists who say no to interviews or only demand that it be together with minders. So I hope progress will be made on this, but principally on the question of substance.
Betsy Pissick, The Washington Times.
Sir, presumably you've brought up all these points with them before, the interviews, accounting for material.
Can you speak up as well, just so we won't ask the same question for us? Sorry.
I'm shouting.
Maybe what I'll do is repeat it.
Okay.
This is
the first time she's been accused of not having a big mouth.
Did you say New York Times?
You brought up all these questions with the Iraqis before. This is your third visit, I believe, to Baghdad. Why do you think that they would hear you or take you any more seriously now than they have in the past? Do you have great expectations for this trip? And if not, how long can you continue the inspections at this level of cooperation?
Well, don't you see some changes in the environment to start with? Wouldn't that be a good reason? Isn't the 5 minutes to midnight in your political assessment?
Is it in your political assessment?
Well, certainly. I mean, Ambassador Negroponte says that the diplomatic window is closing. Well, I'm listening to that, and I hear others who would like to give more time, and I've said that I would welcome more time. Fine, but no, I mean, let's joke. We all know that the situation is very serious. I don't think a decision is final. I don't think that the end is there, that the date has been set for an armed action. I don't think so, not yet. But I think that we are moving closer and closer to it. And therefore, it seemed to me that the Iraqi leadership must be well aware of that. And the steps they take seem to indicate that. They talk about firing, the American soldiers are going to be met by bullets and not by flowers, and they talk about a good number of resistance activities, so they should be aware of it. But it seems to me that they could do things which would change the situation. The principal issue remains, in my view, my assessment, weapons of mass destruction and their existence, and that either present these, if they exist, and we have not said they do, or evidence that convinces the world.
Ian Williams, one of our distinguished past presidents.
Since last month, the 12,000-word document thudded on your desk, it seems to have disappeared. Has the translation finished? Has anyone read it? And is there anything in there that either you didn't know, or that gives any surprises, or gives ammunition to those who say that the Iraqis were hiding things before and they're now fessing up?
They do give some interesting new information about the programs they've had in the field of biology during the 90s, the biotechnology in particular. And they do give information about the missile program that they developed during the period also from 1998 and to the present time. In those areas, there is information that is of use. However, we have, and our experts have not found any significant material that sheds light on the questions of the past, those that were asked in early 1999. And this is our main concern, that an opportunity was missed, in my view. And I think that they should take it now. They have this commission of inquiry that I refer to, and I think they should try to dig up, do the work that was missed here.
So the translation is finished?
Well, not all the supplements. I mean, there are supporting documents, I think. How many? There are 3,000 pages in the main document, and then there are thousands of pages in support. No, what they have done, I mean, most of all this has been presented to UNSCOM before, and therefore, as soon as they identify the document, they say, check, is this exactly the same or is it not? In some cases, in the haste, they have presented the same document five times, which also adds a bit to the volume of it. But I can understand that in the haste. They had 1 month to do it. I'm not facetious about it. But what we do is then to compare it with the old documents and see. It's not 100% guarantee that you do not miss something. But I did ask Dr. Al-Sadi and said that you claim that everything is in this document. And could you help us by giving us a paper indicating pages, references where we should look particularly? And he was kind enough to do that. But our experts have been through those references. We have still not been much helped by it, I regret to say.
David Hirsch, NHK TV.
Dr. Flicks, you said earlier that what you want to get out of this trip is on the substance side. I think specifically probably you're talking about VX and anthrax and those types of issues, assurances that they will actually seek and present items related to these proscribed materials. And I'm wondering, just to be clear on what you're looking for, does that mean just a guarantee on their part that they will be more helpful in the future in giving you evidence of its destruction or where it might be? And if that is what you're looking for, without just actual evidence, do you think that that would fly with the Americans, just to get more assurances from the Iraqis? Or how would you sell that to the Americans, that alone should be good enough for more kinds of inspections?
Well, I don't think it would be enough that they give a guarantee commitment that they will provide this by the 1st of June. No, I think they have to be much more active and go present very promptly, whatever they can present promptly.
Would you present a timeline?
Maybe, no, I haven't set any timeline for it. But I'm sure that they must be aware of, certainly they could be aware of the people. I mean, we have asked for documents, and it's been stated several times, there are no more documents. And then you find a stash of documents in a private house. Not all that relevant, I wouldn't say so. But you find some documents. There may be more. And the other year, the Kuwaitis, when they were looking for the missing Kuwaitis and the missing state archives, they found the state archives of Kuwait. So presumably there are some documents. Okay, let's say that they find no more documents. Then I think they should be super anxious to say that, well, we were people who dealt with this. These were programs that were handled by people. And we find the people who dealt with them, the destruction. And you can talk to them. You can talk to them alone if you want to have credibility. I think they should be very anxious to do so.
But they've never done anything like that, have they?
Well, they said that, well, we encourage these people to come, any people to come to you, whom you ask for. But I think they should perhaps find them then. If they want to convince us, they should be, it's in their interest, after all. So I haven't set any timeline done. And mind you also, the cases I mentioned are examples. They're not at all exhaustive. There may be others. I've just taken a few of them.
Greg, BBC.
Dr. Blicks, earlier on you said that containment is the best you can offer from this mission, but at the same time, President Bush has no confidence in a containment policy. On that basis, how can you hope for a successful conclusion to your mission?
Well, mind you, I didn't say that containment is the best I can hope for this mission. I said that I think that containment is a valid road. It has its shortcomings, and I recognize that, and I recognize that the American impatience perhaps cannot stand containment. For this mission, I would much rather have a presentation of whatever weapons remain, and as promptly as one can reasonably expect, the evidence that we have not seen before. So I don't think containment is what I'm looking for now. I think we look for today and next weekend for something more drastic.
Let's go all the way into the back to Julia Preston, New York Times.
Yeah, Dr. Blicks, I'm wondering if you have seen any episode, any evidence that Iraq is moving things around, hiding things, responding to the inspections by preempting your inspections. Any indication, specific episode that Iraq is
No, we have had many reports of that kind from intelligence agencies. And of course, the most extreme case of it is if they put a biological laboratory in a truck. And we have had reports for a long time about these mobile things, but you never found one. They reported two mobile labs for food testing, and we have inspected those. These were reported from the Iraqis, but we have not found any designed to do weapons. But there have been reports, several reports, from intelligence agencies about this. We have not seen any signs of things being moved around, whether tracks in the sand or in the ground. We have taken a lot of samples also from many places, and if they had had things there, which since has been moved out, then samples might give a chance that you will discover that, yes, there was something here. Not all samples have been analyzed yet, but I'm not aware of any of the samples so far analyzed which would have indicated that there had been something which had been moved.
Linda Fasula.
Dr. Blix, we know that Resolution 1441 clearly demands that Iraq allow manned surveillance flights, including the U-2. Now, we know that Iraq is obviously not permitting this, and we know that USCOM had the benefit of U-2s. How important are the U-2s to your work? And can you be confident that you're monitoring Iraq if they do not give you permission to use them?
Well, there are different platforms that you can use, and we subscribe to satellite imagery, which we buy commercially, not just dependent upon member states to give it. So that's one platform. The U-2 is the next altitude, and it does have particular advantages in that it can, as they call it, loiter over an area, and we would indicate which area we want to have the loitering in. So that's an advantage. Then you have, we might ask for others like Mirage or like the Russian AN or helicopters, of course, is what we use quite a lot and with a great deal of effect. And then you can have drones, and we have discussions with Germany to give us some drones. So the U-2 is a useful one, and what we have said is that you, Iraq, accepted them for UNSCOM. And in fact, when you look at Resolution 1441, there are two places where there are relevant references to the U-2s. One is about aerial surveillance in general, unimpeded, unconditional, I think, at least unimpeded. So there shouldn't be any conditions at all. In the other one, which comes from Mohammed Belbardeh, is in my letter to al-Sadi after our Vienna meeting, we talk about conditions similar to those that were practiced by UNSCOM. And I think that similar, well, that's what we offer. We can do that. We had originally proposed to them that we should give the coordinates where they enter and where they exit only, and that we do not have to tell, we will not tell them when they're coming. But UNSCOM did tell them when they will come, so we felt that, okay, we can go along with that as well. But we do not see an acceptance of that yet. They seem to suggest that one, we should ask the US and the UK to refrain from any military action in the air in the no-fly zones when our U-2 is passing. And that's clearly not similar to what it was in UNSCOM times and which we are demanding.
So do you think you can live without the U-2s?
Well, we are living without them.
On a continued basis.
Well, that's a hypothetical question. I should not have to. I think that everybody will say that you are then giving concessions. You are giving up rights that you have. And I'm not willing to do that.
All right, so I'm getting signals that we should let this go perhaps another. I don't know if you're starting to get very hungry or thirsty. We have to have sustenance in the back.
So tell you the secret, I had a croissant before coming.
Very clever. I'm going to let this go perhaps another 5 minutes, maybe a little bit more. I see a lot of hands up, including some who aren't.
Well, let me answer one question. You did put as a question. That's what
you're going to ask your own question,
are
you?
Yeah, no. But you said that I like to describe myself as a bureaucrat. No, not really. I'm not an ambassador. I've never been an ambassador. I've never been on post abroad. I have been a legal advisor to the Swedish Foreign Ministry. I've been an undersecretary in charge of the Development Cooperation Program, and I've been in charge of the IEA before coming here. My preferences are more analysis and policy making. But I, over all these years, of course, I've had to deal a lot with administration, 16 years in the IEA, with an organization of more than 2,000 people. You have to have some administration. And I am not averse to that. I think that I'm more amused, I'm more enthusiastic dealing with analysis and policy making. But you have to have order in an organization. You cannot have 250 people in Baghdad without paychecks coming on time, planes going on time, reports coming in, secure, etc. There has to be some order in this. And to that extent, even as someone who loves analysis and writing, as I do, I write all my speeches myself, can I tell you. I do appreciate that, yes, we need some administration. But I do not consider myself essentially as a bureaucrat.
Dön, another of our past presidents for the Turkish newspaper Hürriyet.
Ah, thank you. Dr. Bliss, the findings of your committee, are they justified? Is it good enough to justify a wall in Iraq, the American invasion bombing in Iraq? If not, then what the Americans have, what sort of material and the troops the Americans have, your people physically over in Iraq don't have.
What do the Americans have that we don't have?
Yes, which they are almost about to declare war to attack Iraq.
Uh-huh.
Although your people is physically over there, you don't have.
Okay. Well, we do not even take a stand as to whether something done or not done by the Iraqis constitutes material breach, quote unquote. That has to be done by the Security Council. We see ourselves rather as someone who submits the data, the facts, assessment of what there is, and then it is for the tribunal, the Security Council, to decide whether they think this amounts to a material breach or not. If we were to find a big mount of weapons of mass destruction that Iraqis had not declared, not dug up by themselves, I think that would be regarded as a material breach because they hadn't declared it. I think that if we were to have some clear-cut denials of access, that's also likely to be considered as a material breach because access has been so important. But there could be many other situations which were of far less dignity. I'm obliged to report to the Council promptly if we see some violations, impediments to the inspections. Now, we had, in the case of the documents that we found, I did not report it separately. I thought it was had some importance, but not of the importance that I had to run to the President of the Council and tell him. Nor did we run to the Council to report on the 12 chemical warheads that we found. But they were not unimportant. They could be the tips of an iceberg, but they could also be debris after the destruction of a program. And I did not feel that there was the urgency in reporting it to the Council. So here's a judgment, of course, that we have to make. Do we report it to the Council as a factual thing or not? But it's for the Council to decide whether this is a material breach. And at even a higher level is, what conclusions do they draw from a material breach? Do they all, in a consensus, declare that now it's open for attack Iraq, or do they draw some other conclusion? That's far above my pay grade.
Steve, all the way in the back there.
Dr. Blitz, given the nature of the Iraqi regime in which Saddam generally likes to get his own way, to say the least, do you think there's enough time left between now and the 14th for them to kind of redirect their level of cooperation in the area that you say is vital without looking at as though it's capitulation and internally threatening his own standing? And do you think that, you know, if that's so, that the best you could kind of come back to in the 14th is to say that there's some indications that they're moving in a new direction as opposed to completely satisfying what you want on these vital areas?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I think generally in diplomacy and relations between countries, you try to avoid any humiliation if you can. And we certainly in our work, we do not want to humiliate Iraq by the inspections. I'm sure they don't find them amusing, nor do we find it amusing when we take off our shoes at the airport. But the question you asked, could they bring themselves to demonstrate a determination to be actively cooperative on substance? Well, I think that the commission of inquiry that they appointed is something that they could start out from if they really wished. I think that with the gravity of the situation should nevertheless tell them that it is urgent that they do something. They cannot just come with something technical, better cooperation, enhancement of this and that. And I think that if they do not watch the BBC or the CNN, and at least there's the Jazeera that has a lot of a lot of reporting from the region, and that information should trickle up to the highest levels.
I'm going to take, I think, maybe three more questions, you think?
Okay.
Frank Luciano.
Dr. Blix, do you suspect there's going to come a time in the next 3 weeks that the U.S. is going to say the window is closed and you're going to say, I still need more time? And who's going to make the decision for you to stay or go at that point?
The Security Council is the one that decides for us. We do not decide ourselves. But of course, if there is a march in, we don't know, then we will have to, certainly, if there's time, I think the Council will give us the instruction. If there's less time, then it's the Secretary General who I will consult with.
So if the U.S. said, we're going to go in within a week, and you heard this, what would be your first question to ask of the Council or the Secretary General?
Well, I'd ask the Council, what shall we do?
James Byrne is not an UNCA member, but I'm going to make
an
exception.
I am an UNCA member.
As
of this morning.
I'm glad I've boosted the membership here.
Scientists. First of all, I want to know why you've been so soft on interviewing scientists. I mean, you have a Chapter 7 resolution which gives you legal power to interview scientists, and you seem to be willing to accept only voluntary interviews. Why are you not actually subpoenaing scientists to appear before you and even to appear before you outside the country? And secondly, I'd like to ask you, what happened to that poor guy who jumped into the UN jeep, gave something to the UN and dragged away shouting, save me, save me? Have you made any effort to check out what happened to that guy?
How do you suggest that we should issue and enforce a subpoena in Baghdad? When here you have sheriffs, you suggest that we should subpoena someone.
Whether to talk to you or not, and I'm saying that you have a legal instrument that gives you
a subpoena.
Power, they don't have a choice.
We don't have a subpoena institute in Baghdad. We ask these people to come to us, and they come with minders, and they say, we're not very willing to talk unless the minder is present. Well, do we ask for a policeman to send the minder to the prison, or do we send the...
You're a legal body with a legal power.
No, we do not have an enforcement power.
There's been a recent suggestion that Iraq could accept foreigners.
The second question about the guy.
About the poor guy who was dragged away on television, just shouting, saying,
well, I understand. I just talked to our security chief in Baghdad, who was here temporarily, and he said there was nothing in the booklet that he seemed to be carrying.
But have you made any effort to find out that the guy wasn't there?
Yes, they have asked. They've been promised a report from the Iraqi.
Sure, but he wasn't a scientist.
No, we don't know his identity, even. He had no identity papers on him, so we don't know that.
It wasn't a very good message, was it, given to the other scientists who might want to approach you?
Well, if they want to approach you, there are more elegant ways of doing it. We had another guy just before him who tried to break into the place with three knives on his legs.
Iraq recently came up with a suggestion to use...
Thank you for taking all our questions all these days, by the way. How concerned are you that you might be now caught in the middle of actual manipulation by the Iraqis to try to stall for time? Your predecessors have often expressed the feeling that they have felt, you know, manipulated by the Iraqis who are stalling for time. How do you feel about that?
How do you mean manipulated?
That they may be calling you back to Baghdad to give themselves a little more time.
Oh, yeah.
The U.S. is pressing for more time. You're caught in the middle. No. How do you feel?
Of course. Everybody does that. but we have other things. We talk about intelligence and how they may be hiding things. Of course, we are aware of a place where there will be bugs everywhere. They have lots of minders for each inspector. In some cases, we had 5 minders per inspector on an inspection. And that the hotel rooms surely are bugged as well. Telephones bugged, and there's surveillance, yes. But when it comes to really important confidential things, like where do we go, to what target do we go, especially if there's a tips, well, the procedures we follow are very, very rigid. It's a very small group of people who have any knowledge of it, and it's a very short time window also before it. And these are discussed with those who provide us evidence. So all the rest is an insecure environment. This is an insecure environment. Our offices here are insecure environment. We are fully aware of that. Now, in terms of manipulation, perhaps this is not really what you meant, but rather, are they trying to play with you diplomatically, cat and mouse?
Yes.
Yes.
I guess because on the other side, you have the U.S. pushing very strongly on the timing aspect.
All right.
And how confident are you that you are not just part of this master stalling plan?
Well, I didn't see any great harm in going there now. I think there. I am to report to the Council on the 14th of February, and here is a weekend before that. The Iraqis, I say, come and discuss with us, And we have said, I've said in the Council that we would like them to get to an active cooperation on substance. And I think that I'm dealing with very intelligent, sophisticated people in Baghdad, that I can tell that to their eye. They are requesting us to discuss methods of bringing forward evidence. That, all right, this is a chance, and I report next week and tell the Council precisely what my impressions were from that exercise.
All right, I'm
okay.
Why can't you find out? And if it was the case, wouldn't that be a violation itself of Resolution 1441?
Well, well, even if it were, I mean, I'm not sure it is a material breach. That's for the Council. We would report it if we find the bugs. We would. We do sweepings. We do sweepings. Yes, of course
and
we
you
do.
Found bugs?
No, not to my knowledge. Neither here nor there. So far, and of any nationality. There could be several.
All right.
Okay.
Dr. Lewis, thanks very much. I said if we can induce you to stay back for a sandwich and...
I think I'd go up.
Else, but I think
no, okay.
Dr. Lex, I just have a question. Who will you be meeting? What do you expect?
Dr. Al-Sadi is the main opposite number, and he is... And Dr. Hussein Amin, who is the head of the national...
You are pretty, right?